Ingram, Oladamare, Jenyami, Olaroon, God, Jehovah, Allah, Amen Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our request will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgery, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today, to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. Okay. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work, and we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our families, for our communities, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you and our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We said libation, libation, libation. It is good.
Their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Before the white man came. best. Silver and gold are trinkets we wore, and the finest of clothes we were dressed. Large were the herds of longhorn steer and buffalo on the plains. Full were the peace pipes that we smoked before the white man came. Arrived and they landed on these shores. What manner of being is this? We said we have never seen them before. But even so, we extended our hand as we would unto a friend. How could we have known that syphilis and claps and plague had come with them? And now it has been 400 years. Since that eventful day. But if we had known what they had in mind, they all would have died in the bay. So now we're paying for our mistakes, with only ourselves to blame, with memories of the good old years before the white man came.
Hello, my name is Nawanda Chambers, co-host of the Black Reality Think Tank, and I am coming to you with a public service announcement about the COVID-19 blues. Has COVID-19 got you down? Are you unsure of what to do to protect yourself? Stressed out because you do not know how to manage the new challenges that COVID-19 has created? Are you experiencing symptoms? Are you afraid? Do you need help with something else? If you answer yes to any of these questions, contact the crisis line at 1-800-985-5990 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Remember, there is hope, and let's stay safe.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters. Welcome here for another edition of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend, part two. We're so happy that you were able to join us here this Saturday afternoon. We are here every Saturday afternoon at 6 p.m. Central Time. And so we do appreciate you being here with us this evening. We have a wonderful, dynamic, stimulating, invigorating discussion that will take place in just a few minutes. We operate on the timeforanawakening.com network platform, which is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. We have other programs that also air on this program. We'll talk about them at the top of the hour and give you an idea of some of the other programs that are upcoming. But we don't want to prolong our existence today and our conversation, so I'm going to get right into it. This program is being produced and directed by the Sankofa Elders Council of Milwaukee under the direction of Brother Alfonso Watkins. So at this time, I will turn it over to him and let him introduce the guests and the dialogue. Good afternoon, my brother.
Hold up, Baba. May I have permission to speak?
Yes.
Thank you, Baba. Once again, family, it's always a pleasure to be amongst y'all, to be able to speak out into the universe and drive on this frequency, sharing information as it relates to the critical time that we live in our story as we continue to resurrect ourselves out of a condition that has never been done to any other people on the planet. Once again, my name is Brother Alfonso Watkins. I am a representative of the Sankofa Elders Council here in Milwaukee. And I always just like to start off with thanking the elders who have been part of establishing and laying the foundation of this Elders Council here in Milwaukee. We have been fellowshipping and loving and meeting and nurturing on each other for the last 8 or 9 months on every Wednesday from 6:30 to 8:30. We have only missed almost 4 or 5 Wednesdays out of these eight or nine months. So I'm thankful for the commitment that these elders have committed their time to establishing this. So I always like to just start off with that. And then the second thing I would just like to do is to share the purpose of this council, this Sankofa Elders Council. The purpose is to build a council of elders to address the environmental and social conditions and human disparities we face in the city of Milwaukee around the foundational universal African principles of unity and the principles of cooperation. These principles will provide an overarching and unifying ideology for the collective mission of building a united front with one unified voice in the city of Milwaukee for the descendants of Africans in the Milwaukee community. That's our purpose. The mission: to engage, aid, and assist in the continuous building of the movement and network of elders who are governed by the principles of Ma'at, the Nguga Saba, which is the seventh principle of Kwanzaa, to address disparities and circumstances we face in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as we move into the 21st century. The role and function will be to the provision of one voice of spiritual guidance, formation of policy, and the development of programs and services in all areas of human activity, and various projects which will contribute to the growth, self-governance, economic empowerment of the African-American community in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A very critical component of the Sankofa Elders Council is to establish these think tanks. And the purpose of the think tanks will be led by elders who have a particular level of expertise and experience within that area of science. And that's which, once again, is the think tank. The role and the mission of these think tanks is to critically analyze our environmental and social conditions in the city through research and create proactive strategies, solutions to address these circumstances and disparities. And so everybody please mute themselves. The ones that are not going to be speaking, could you please mute yourself, because there's a lot of background noise that is coming across the radio frequency right now. Thank you. The 11 areas of the think tank are spiritual development, health, which is our physical health and our psychological health, education, politics, economics, security, defense, and warfare is all one think tank. Law and justice is one think tank. Information and media is another think tank. History, culture, and art is one think tank. Science and technology is one think tank. And then labor, jobs, and human capital is one think tank. And so part of what we are going to be doing here in the city, and hopefully there are some brothers and sisters across the country who have established think tanks or and planning on establishing think tanks, is looking at how do we take the expertise, the genius of our elders, and use that information to their expertise to disseminate information, to help us move information out of these think tanks, to help our people understand that we have to make some lifestyle changes to have an impact on our on our condition as we move forward into the 21st century. So part of, once again, is looking at what type of human being do we need to create as we move into the 21st century. So the Council of Elders is, once again, is going to be this hub of information where we can, once again, connect our elders back to the community, connect our elders to the millennials, and then connect our elders to curriculums that we can, once again, move our people out of the state of mind, the state of physical health that they are in, so once again, we can take control of our own destiny, we can be self-determined, and once again, move back to our rightful place on the planet. So part of, once again, is just introducing that concept of that. I have two very distinguished African warriors in our community as it relates to having a conversation about the theme of our subject matter tonight is Awakening the Genius in African Adults and Children through Pan-Africanism and an African-centered education. So that's the theme of the conversation tonight. But the first thing I want to share is a definition of culture. I think we have to get back to the foundation of understanding that culture cultivates your spirit and culture cultivates your personality. So I want to read the definition that Queen Mother Marumba Ani has that she talks about in her book, Yoruba. First thing she says is that the critical analysis and critical thinking is having a frame of reference to lay a foundation to focus our thoughts. An African worldview is the basis for a conceptual framework for thinking about thought. We must consciously construct an evolving conceptual frame of reference upon which to start a paradigm shift for a new conceptualization toward a new context. Culture is the context for us to establish our collective experience and foundation where life takes on meaning and gives us order and purpose. Culture tells us who we are and what we should be doing. It also gives us a common theme for life. Culture forces the group to think and cooperate with one another. Culture extends the power and progress of the group. Enculturation is implanting a spirit or a personality in the individual of the group. So just laying that foundation as we have this conversation is getting us to really do a critical analysis of the type of human beings that we are producing at the present time, but also realizing the reality of what type of human beings were African warriors that we need to create moving forward. So what we are doing is, with this conversation from a Pan-Africanist and an African-centered curriculum, is understanding that we have African-centered curriculums out there that have been produced by our African scholars. But we at a stage where we have to start implementing those curriculums, implementing this African personality. So with that said, I'm going to just turn it over to my brothers. My first brother that I want to introduce is Brother Derek Rogers. Derek Rogers is an African-centered consultant. He is a retired principal. And I want to give Derek an opportunity to introduce himself. And Derek, I'm going to just start off with the first question that I have for you. Are you with me, Derek?
Yes, sir.
All right, brother. As you introduce yourself, I just want you to think about the question is, from your experience, why is an African-centered curriculum so important? So go ahead, big brother.
Okay, well, first of all, just giving honor to God and to my ancestors, and just wanted to thank and give honor to first to Dr. Rogers, who for many years, this is going back over 20 years, has been a mentor both near and far in actually two areas of my development, both theology and in terms of African-centered education. So I just thank him for the impact that he has had. And to my brother, Alfonso Watkins, we go back a good 25 years. Had the pleasure of being an educator in the same building, the same institution, a middle school known as Malcolm X Academy here in Milwaukee, where, you know, we had, you know, highs and lows of trying to get that pedagogical understanding moving in this city. A work that is still undone 25 years later. So I'm just thankful for the continued work that he has done. I'm appreciative of him being my brother in struggle for many years now in the community. So just wanted to say that. But why is an African-centered education important? You know, I'll give you one. The best reason I can give comes from my own personal experience, and that is from third grade through senior year in high school here in this city, I attended schools that were predominantly white, high percentage white, as a matter of fact. And when I was placed in those schools by my parents, the notion, of course, was, particularly in the first school, it had a program that was known as superior ability, and they were actually recruiting, they were actually looking for black youth that they could find in the city to integrate their program. So at that particular time, my parents, who, and understand, this is the early 70s that I'm talking about, parents who may not have been operating out of a certain level of consciousness or understanding, but who merely were looking for their little black son to have what they thought was the best opportunity for academic success. So I was chosen for that program. They sent me over there to the East Side, Hartford Avenue School. I spent 3 years there. After that, they tried to extend that opportunity, and I was when they started what was known as Chapter 220 here in the Milwaukee area, voluntary desegregation. Brown Deer Schools, suburb of Milwaukee, was one of the first outlying areas who had voluntarily agreed to be part of that program. So my parents sent me there as well. With that said, I spent, I guess that's a total of about 9 years, receiving, probably gaining some pretty good academic skills, I would say, but receiving what clearly was a very solid European indoctrination and a very solid schooling as opposed to education, and was fully immersed in what I think Umar Johnson refers to as the psycho-academic holocaust. So I was fully immersed. And to be honest, it took many years, it took several years to recover from that experience. Did I encounter a lot of blatant racism, being called a nigger, that type of thing? Not really. No. And it wasn't until in retrospect when I watched how I was buffered somewhat, and I got quotation marks up right now, from certain effects, direct effects of racism, bigotry, white supremacy in those atmospheres for two reasons. Because I was, quote unquote, academically high, and number two, I was an athlete. So because of that, little Derek was held up as this, obviously this desegregation piece is working because look at him, he's doing okay. And looking back years later, once I had entered my early 20s, mid-20s, and I looked back in retrospect and I thought about how many of my friends and peers who rode that yellow bus out there to the suburbs with me, how many of them suffered under that paradigm that they had been immersed in. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, well, I guess the fortunate thing is having that experience, it made me, and beginning to do work in the public schools at the age of 23, having that experience made things begin to make sense, because when I was introduced, my first introduction to anything relative to African-centeredness was a few Africology courses that I had taken in college, and then beginning to read, once I started working with young people, beginning to read some of the works of Jwanza Kanjufu. And relative to the systematic destruction of black boys, fourth grade failure syndrome, all of that, it made all of my experiences make sense. It made so many things that I had seen and felt make sense. So that was the beginning of my journey. African-centered education in particular, once I went a little further, into education, I went into settings as a teacher in my early years of teaching, back in the early 90s. I was in settings where it was clear that the particularly young black males, everything that Jwanza Kanjufu had laid out, it was pretty obvious. And so in those settings, I made every effort that I could to create my own educational environment within those schools. There was a school here called Grand Avenue Middle School. For 3 years, I went to the principal and I said, hey, can you give me these young people who clearly none of these white teachers want to work with? I'll take them all day. I'll teach them all subjects, and I would like to be able to incorporate what I feel they need. I created a program called the ACE program, Academics, Culture, and Esteem. It was based off a lot of the philosophy of Jwanza Kanjufu and Janice Hale, Benson, and some other people. I took those kids and I said, I'm just going to do the best I could with them. I did that for 3 years. After that, I was blessed to be able to come over to the one of the African-American immersion schools that had been designed here in Milwaukee, Malcolm X Academy, and that's where I met Alfonso. And I know those schools were developed with a lot of work and with a lot of pushback here in the city. But the whole notion of African-centered education is something that we can't avoid. It really is the only answer to everything that our young people are dealing with. If we cannot find a way to recognize how the transformative essence of the importance of the transformative essence of African culture that Alfonso laid out for us and consciousness and being anchored in those timeless values, that is the only way we can come out of the conundrum that our young people and our entire our African people are in. That socialization needs to start early. It needs to start with a holistic educational experience for our young people. I mean, we have to find ways that creating educational paradigms that really take into account, that integrate all of the cognitive and historical and psychosocial and cultural and political and developmental considerations of our young people.
Hold that thought.
Yes,
I'm gonna come back to you. I'm gonna let you get your chance.
Oh, absolutely. I know how far you want me to go, Gala.
I know, yeah, but we're gonna come back to you. Let me give Terrence an opportunity to get in here and drop
okay,
some time.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, brother. Next guest is Terrence Tyler. Terrence is another educator here in Milwaukee. He is a member of Africans on the Move here in Milwaukee, and they've done some magnificent things with Pan-Africanism and teaching our young brothers and sisters. So I want to give Terrence an opportunity to share what Africans on the Move Revolutionary Party is, and then to share his perspective of from his experience of how Pan-Africanism and African-centered education is the impact that it has and can have on the education of our people. So go ahead, Terrence.
Wow. I was just zoned out listening to Bobby Rogers. It's just amazing how much you learn about individuals, and some people may not know me and this brother share the same birthday date. February
18th. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Just to hear him talk, it's just, we, mind think alike here. Real quick, again, I just want to echo Barbara's comment about Dr. William Rogers as well. I had the opportunity to attend his course at UWM at Baptist Black Church, and just introducing me to terms like theology. I didn't know who Albert Cleese and James Cone were until I was in his class and read about those brothers. And I still hold dearly that 100A paper that I got. Still got a copy of it. And Brother Alfonso, our work is just beginning, and it's great things ahead. So I just want to salute you all in that aspect. Again, I represent Africans on the Move. We are a local nonprofit organization here in Milwaukee who seeks to increase the consciousness of our people through African history and culture. While I'm with Africans on the Move, I also belong to the Pan-African Revolutionary Socialist Party, better known as PRSP. We are a revolutionary organization committed to bringing about Pan-Africanism, and to us that definition is simple: the liberation, total liberation, and unification of Africa under socialism. We are convinced that this is the quickest way to solve our problems in this world today. Connecting Pan-Africanism to an African-centered education. Just quickly, my journey along almost the same path. Again, I'm a few years behind Bobby here, but I was introduced into consciousness through hip-hop music. So any chance I get, I gotta raise the hip-hop culture up. It's still out, still got conscious artists still out, but again, being introduced to Malcolm X and people like that through Public Enemy, KRS-One, Poor Righteous Teachers, Brand New, Being Paired, X-Clan, those in the groups out there, begin my quest to learn more about who I was. So I had the fortune to get an African history class in high school, I think my senior year. In that classroom, I was introduced to a booklet. And my teacher then was Larry Gross, rest in Yahuru. Larry Gross taught me through the booklet, it's more than just listening to the music. You got to go out and learn and study. So with that booklet, I was on my way. Chancellor Williams, Destruction of Black Civilization. George D. and James, Stolen Legacy. Obviously, the autobiography of Malcolm X and a few others. So I begin my quest that way. Again, all of this is just theory forming in my head. It wasn't until I met Dr. Ahmed Mbalia along with Dr. Darifa Mbalia, and that's where the action component was hiding along with my theory. And, with the theory being strengthened, obviously. So I began to see that, it's more than just listening and reading. You got to go out here and provide action. So with that, I've been in organizations, I would say, the last 21 years or so. And that's where I became a Pan-African. So we at Africans on the Move, we have a weekend. One of the things we do is a weekend school called Watoto Yahuru Shule, which in Swahili stands for Children's Freedom School. And we think, and we believe, in addition to attending these capitalist educational institutions like Bob Rogers, like myself, where, we were being miseducated, we believe our children must be engaged in educational forms which help them analyze the world, in particular African people. So at our school, we study, African history and culture as well as current events. We try to reinforce traditional beliefs and values and principles such as treating people the way you like to be treated, humanism, collectivism, working in a group, and obviously giving people equal opportunity to develop, which is egalitarianism. So we understand the youth is the future, and without that future, our people will be bleak. I can, it, you know, some of the topics, I don't know how long the conversation go on, but we talk about identity. Instead of Halloween, we do Ancestry Day, where you dress up as one of your ancestors. We acknowledge Native Americans Day and their land base here in the U.S. We talk about Kwanzaa, health, traditional Africa, among many things, neocolonialism. So those are the things we do at Watoto Yahuwu Shula. And just, you know, this last year with Corona, these last few months, we were able to switch over virtually and maintain this level of teaching.
All right. Well, thank you, brother. Thank you. Thank you, brothers, for the science that y'all just dropped. The next part of the conversation, I would just like for y'all to go a little more in depth as it relates to the vehicles. As we've had this conversation about pedagogies, and I know that's your area of the science, but you can go more into the science pedagogy that's going to be needed to have the necessary impact on our children's spiritual, psychological, and physical development, the biological. But I think we as we have this conversation and we start to think about the body of knowledge that is going to be needed to create a theoretical approach of the implementation of a curriculum, or to improve the outcome that we need to see in our children at these very critical stages of their development. So Derek, if you can go into a little more of the science about what that pedagogy looks like, as not just for the teachers to be able to implement, but for the parents to understand the reality that they are their children's first teacher, and we have to create a curriculum that engulfs the parents to be engaged in this process. So Derek, could you touch on that right quick, brother?
Absolutely. At the deeper level, it's going to be necessary that whatever is developed is operating, again, as I said earlier, out of that transformative essence of our culture. And, of course, we know that goes back, you know, thousands of years to the understandings of everything from the divisions of the spirit to our Ma'adian understandings. Being able to integrate what is really the essence of the best of us into something that is very current and not even modern anymore, but now we've entered a post-modern era. You know, because what one of the biggest challenges for us, for those of us who seek to embrace and forward an African-centered notion of educating our youth, is to really, really say that can be done, but we cannot do it divorcing ourselves from the reality that if we still are in this physical place of America, we're living under a particular cultural framework that's kind of like the air that we breathe. So how do we create the submarine that we need to swim through all of this decadence and the chaos and the I guess what was known as the Isfet at one point, but that begins with having the ability to take what's very deep and make it palatable and something that's appetizing for our young people today. That is a very that's an art form that all going to have to engage, you know, deeper in. But whatever it is, it's just a few things that we're going to have to be able to do. We have to be able to create academic atmospheres that are balanced, that are integrated, that are research based on the best of our people's research. We got to be able to infuse, you know, culturally centered historical literacy. You know, we got to be able to do inquiry-based learning. You know, we have to be able to, you know, help our young people, you know, develop critical skills for identifying oppression and injustice. our young people, for the most part, have had all of this pretty, they've come into a society and into a world where the school system, of course, isn't giving it, and their parents have been ill-equipped to provide these things for them. So two things have to occur, Gala. On the one hand, we know what the public schools will not do. We have to do two things. We have to make every effort again to create independent institutions that can provide these things. Number two, create spaces where these things are offered and made available for people to come to. But more importantly, because of the society that we live in, when we're talking about everything from social media to the digital attention that we give to everything, or the attention that digital technology gives to us, we have to find ways to create educational platforms where people are and where they're already attracted to. So that technology piece is huge. It's huge. So we have to expand our notion, what I'm trying to say is, of what the classroom is. We can no longer think, if I'm offering a lecture over here or a talk over here or a panel down the street, that people, particularly young people, are going to engage that. We have to be very clever, very savvy about how we expand our notion of what we want to offer to the people.
Thank you, brother. That's deep, man. That's deep. I appreciate that. Brother
sir.
Tim.
Yes.
My question for you is, Baba mentioned the we're functioning in a European social construct in America. And he mentioned the submarine that we're going to need to you know, put a buffer, put a face, some protection around us and our children as we attempt to once again navigate through this European social construct in this country. So I know within Pan-Africanism, the conversation around socialism and imperialism, egalitarian, could you go a little bit more into that? Because I think we need that. That's the implementation of what we're going to need, bringing the abstract to the concrete. So if you could talk a little bit more about what type of personality socialism creates and then the concept of what egalitarian is.
All right. Well, one thing, we are in Krumis, TRSC. We follow the ideology named after Kwame Nkrumah, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. And it's basically taking the dialectical and historical, the principles of dialectical and historical principles, and applying it to African people. So really focusing on us, using a framework for us. So we don't have to, we could read Karl Marx and Engels, but, you know, it was aligned for Europeans. So, you know, basically, Nkrumah took the basic principles of dialectic and historical materialism and applied it to us. Now, as far as making that, was it basically making a connecting school or? Oh, the principle of egalitarianism.
So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. We teach the kids, one of the first things we teach them is these three basic African traditional principles. And not only kids, I try to live these principles out every day myself. And egalitarianism is giving everyone an equal opportunity. So, you know, explaining it to maybe a 4 to 5 year old, if two boys are playing with a race car and a little girl wants to play with the car, you know, we say to the boy, you share that race car, you give her that opportunity to ride around or drive that race car. So something as basic as that. So it gives them a chance to say, no matter your gender, no matter your ability, whether you can play basketball or not, give me a chance to shoot the ball. You know, so no matter your ability, lack thereof, your gender, what have you, giving each one an equal opportunity to realize their fullest potential. So that's what we teach with egalitarianism. You mentioned socialism. So, you know, being in this capitalist system, and we say capitalism is our enemy, without a doubt. And just if you look at recent events with what's going on with Corona, the coronavirus, we put out a leaflet a couple of months ago saying Corona is the virus, but capitalism is the pandemic. So what we have to understand is this system here, where the great majority of resources are in the hands of the 1% or the few, and it creates inequality on all levels throughout the system. Another piece we just recently put out said it's not the man, it's the plan, and we're just explaining, you know, we could defund the police, we can abolish the police, but as long as we have this capitalist system, we're going to continue to have, you know, African people beat up, killed, and terrorized by some, you know, figure, whether it's police, the military, the KKK, etc. So we have to do away with the system. So in doing away with capitalism, you have to bring in, you know, a system that's fair for the people. And that's the socialist system. And, you know, under socialism, the means of production, the modes of production will be in the hands of the people and delved out fairly and equal among all. So people will have according to what they need and not necessarily what they want. So that's what we say. And when we connect that to Africa, because that's our rightful land. Yeah, we over in America, and yeah, we built this place through slavery, our labor, our exploited labor, but this still is the indigenous natives' land. And Africa is the richest land base in the world. And just like Baba was saying with technology, I mean, you can't make a cell phone without the culture that's found in Africa. So, we, you know, our kids got to be able to understand that, the richness of the land from their ancestors are from, and how that applies to today. I don't know if I touched everything you said, boy, but I kind of hope I did. And if I did, you can follow back up with me.
Yeah, good job, brother. I appreciate it, man. Y'all brothers are dropping some science. And like I said, this conversation is, once again, we're going to come back and revisit this conversation later on, and, you know, God willing, in the future. But part of what we attempt to do on this program is not just talk about the issue, but talk about some valuable information to implement, to come up with some, once again, some theoretical modalities, approaches to address our circumstances, because we had a very critical stage in our story, and it's critical that we are able to do critical analysis of where we are, and then, once again, looking at how do we move forward, once again, creating this space. And part of, once again, of having this conversation from a Pan-Africanist and African-centered perspective is understanding that we have tried everything else. We've tried everything else. So we the only thing we haven't tried is to the sustainability of focusing back on our culture. And like Derek was articulating, the evolution of our culture, being able to make it, I'm going to say, having the correct flavor for our children to be engaged in understanding the culture, our African culture, and the evolution of the African culture. So what y'all are sharing is very critical as it relates to how do we begin to merge the abstract concept of an African-centered curriculum into the movement of Pan-Africanism. How do we merge to? Because once you start talking about the merger of it, then it becomes an international conversation, like you just did, Terrence, connecting our babies to the land, connecting them to the resources on the continent. So as we have this conversation, family, just getting us to see outside of the European social construct, because a lot of times when we have a conversation, we're still functioning in the European social construct instead of functioning outside of that and looking at it through the lens of our ancestors.
Absolutely.
So, Derek, y'all can do that. So, Derek, did you
want to
chime in a little more?
Because
we got about
Because you just made a great point based off of what Terrence was saying, and when you said connecting it to our motherland, connecting it to our home, because. I bring that back to a couple of years ago. I spent almost 2 years, and Gullah, you're familiar with my goddaughter Aisha Carr.
Yes,
we spent almost 2 years looking to develop an African centered institution. Wouldn't have been independent. It would have almost been forced to operate under the charter system based on resources. And that, for me, was the most frustrating element of the journey, because under that system, of course, you still would not have true autonomy, true mm-hmm. independence, true ability to forward an educational framework and a pedagogical framework that we know would best socialize our young people. And so to hear Terrence say, the notion of if we're connected in a real way, in a pan-Africanist way, that right there, and here's me being transparent, that's an area where I had never thought outside of the box or come out of a certain paradigm, in the sense of there are resources that go beyond Milwaukee. There are resources that, if connected to in a real and viable way, if we created those bridges, we may have a better possibility for the level of independence to educate our young people the way we'd like to.
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to definitely piggyback off Derek's point earlier about just spacing for people to come through. You know, that's one of the most challenging issues for us as AOM, to keep Watoto Yuhuru Shule going, is to have a space, you know. Right now, before Corona hit, we were operating out of the Running Rebels Eastside place. But just having that independent space to try to bring in the youth. It's one thing to bring in youth in that adolescent stage where, you know, parents are coming. But like you said earlier, having a space where we can get youth to come into, because we have to meet them on that level. Just being in education now and teaching social studies in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I mean, they're so detached. If I don't connect it, culturally speaking, whether it's through the music, whether it's through, you know, their social media outlets, somehow I got to drop something that they know, that they do daily, into the lesson to make it connect. And you know, it's definitely a challenge there, but one that we have to, you know, take, continue to struggle for.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful. We're coming up on the hour. I am truly, and I hope the audience is truly enjoying the dialogue, the conversation, the exchange of the information. But I'm not only just enjoying it, but hopefully you're taking some notes so that we can continue to build on this conversation as we move forward with, once again, with the concept of the implementation of this concept of connecting Pan-Africanism and African-centered education and connecting that to the motherland. Dr. Rogers, last Saturday, Dr. Rogers can share a little more about some brothers and sisters from the motherland who are interested in connecting with us. So like Derek, when you mentioned that outside of Milwaukee, we have to make a connection with our brothers and sisters from the homeland so that we can get access to those resources to sustain what we are doing here in the state. But also we have to get to a place where, within the context of our elders, we have so many elders that have money, that have access to resources. So we have to get them to, once again, be willing to make the investment in the future generations with the money that they have to once again to sustain what we are attempting to do with this Pan-Africanism in the African-centered curriculum. So, Doc Rogers, is it time for the break?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, my brother. Okay, when we come back, I'll just mention a little bit of that meeting last Sunday. This conversation is so powerful. It's so much energy. He is scaring me. It makes me think he's going to blow a fuse in a minute. So it's really strong. But we're going to take a break, and we'll come right back, and I'll share that that whole information about the African Union. Okay.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro, you represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted. Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. When we come together, we don't come together as Baptists or Methodists. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist, and you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an Elk. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship. In chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by the people who came.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercial. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
I hope pearly white teeth fall of the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end. And nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats to survive. When the revolution comes.
Revolution is sound. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, guns and rifles will be taking the place of poems and essays. Black cultural centers will be forts supplying the revolutionaries with food and arms when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, white death will fall off the walls of museums and churches, breaking the lie that enslaved our mothers. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jesus Christ is going to be standing on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 125th Street, trying to catch the first gypsy cab out of Harlem. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jew merchants will give away monster balls and gefilte fish to anyone they see with an afro. Frank Schiffman will give away the Apollo to the first person he sees wearing a blue dashiki. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. Afros gonna be trying to straighten their heads. And straighten heads gonna be trying to wear afros. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
But until then, you know and I know niggas will party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit. And party. Some might even die.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are back, my brothers and sisters, and we are here for the second part of the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition, part two, with Brother Alfonso Watkins, Brother Derek Rogers, and Brother Terrence Tyler. Powerful conversation. Three brothers who are not just don't talk the game, they do the game. And that's what's so great about them. And this intergenerational collaboration effort is powerful. The Black Reality Think Tank operates on the timeforanawakening.com platform, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. The network is an international outreach. They are involved with several individuals and institutions outside of the USA. There is a very strong collaboration with the University of Ghana, the interaction there with the brother by the last name of Cambone, Brother Cambone. And on last week, the Vice Chancellor, I think he's called the Vice Chancellor, of the African Union, which represents 55 African countries, wanted to come before a group of African-American organizations here in the U.S. And in England, in the U.K., and other areas, and just simply talk about what they saw as it relates to the racism that is being heightened against our people and some of the disaster that we may be encountering from COVID-19. And so he came to talk about what the African Union would like to be able to do in support of the brothers and sisters here in the diaspora. And so they did a 30-minute lecture or conference address using the Time for an Awakening platform network, and was able to do a reach out and open themselves up to support and do some things that you may like to do or you may like to fund. And that information is available. If we can use it by going to the Time for an Awakening website and just email that if you want to get some additional specific things that might happen. You're more welcome to do that. And I'll repeat it again. It's www.timeforanawakening.com. www.timeforanawakening.com. And that network is operated by two brothers out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Brother Elliot and Brother Elliot Booker, and his last name, Booker, and Brother Richard. And what they do is they have their own broadcast, which comes on Friday evenings from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, and one comes on Sunday from 7 to 10 Eastern Time. And so you can tune in to that, and as well as email them if you'd like to get some further information on the relationship between the African Union and the African brothers and sisters in the diaspora. I also just want to mention that the Black Reality Think Tank has three other programs on this network as well. On Tuesday evenings from 7 to 9 Central Time, there is a program that we do, the normal program, and that program is hosted by myself. And it's so interesting that on this Tuesday coming up, we will be talking with a group of educational activists out of Dallas, Texas. It's an organization called BOOM, B-O-O-M. I'm not quite sure what that acronym is. I don't have the paperwork in front of me. But they are in a group that has they have a group of interns, college interns and college graduates who are now in training in preparation to get ready to go and work with our children. And they're going to come on next week and talk about how to talk to our children about racism. And what is it that needs to be said, and the way that can it be said that does not become traumatic for them. And they have all summer internships, and they are doing that. Miss Jamie Lachey, who has been a previous guest on our program, is going to lead that discussion with us and talk about what do you tell them about George Floyd? what do you tell them about police behavior and help them to understand that and understand it in a way that it doesn't become traumatized? So that's going to happen this Tuesday from 7 to 9 right here at timeforanawakening.com. And then on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, we have a weekend edition program hosted by LaWanda Chambers and Miss Leola Williams. They talk about issues that involve family, women, relationships, so forth. Very dynamic discussion as well. They just completed one where they talked about when African people want to stop being a sideshow, being used as sideshows in our culture. Very dynamic. And then on Thursday, we have four sisters who are millennials, and they talk about things that relate to themselves. They talk about families, relationships, young people, children. A lot of them are raising babies, and so they come on together, and they did a very good job last week. That was their maiden voyage, and they did a fantastic presentation as well. So that is the Black Reality Family Network. And we are so happy and proud that they're there. All of our programs are archived, too, by the way. You can simply go to the www.timeforanawakening.com website, pull down the podcast portal, and go to Black Reality Think Tank, and all of our programs are there. And you can go back and listen to any of them 24/7. This program should be up by tomorrow, the one that we're doing right now here with my three brothers. And you'll be able to listen to that tomorrow. And by all means, share it with others who may not have been able to hear it. We appreciate all of you, my listening audience, and thank you, Brother Alfonso. And I'm going to put you back to work, my brother. This is out of sight.
All right, Baba. Thank you. Thank you. Once again, family, it's always a pleasure. We want to thank all of you who are tuned in on this Saturday evening. It is a beautiful day here in Milwaukee. I am really struggling because we need that vitamin D, and we don't get opportunity to get it that often. But the revolution, the struggle, we must prioritize our time, and we must use our time wisely under the conditions that we living in, living amongst these Europeans at this time. Because they have lost their minds, and when they lose their minds, they take it to a whole nother level of warfare as it relates to our relationship to them. And that's part of what we're seeing with them, with the lynching and the execution of black men and women in this city. In this country. So we have to recognize that part of when we start talking about Pan-Africanism and an African-centered education is understanding that the areas of science that we are talking about as it relates to politics, as it relates to economics, as it relates to labor, as it relates to warfare, the curriculum that we are talking about has to be able to master the language and the linguistics that come with those sciences so that we can once again prepare our children to be able to function at all levels of their human development. So an African-centered curriculum is not just about academics. It's not just about them being able to read and write. It's about them being able to understand the sciences of human development so that they can be able to navigate their way through these systems, but not navigate them to be part of the European system, but they understand that the education and the socialization that they are receiving is for the benefit of the African people from a cultural perspective. And so part of this conversation as we move into the next phase of it is having Derek and Terrence talk about it from their lenses, but talk about it from the perspective of us understanding how does culture, because every other culture that comes to America, every other ethnic group that comes to America, they have a buffer in between them and their in this European system. And part of our relationship to America is that we are the fabric of America. So we have a hard time separating ourselves from how America functions because America functions on us being dysfunctional. America functions on us being dysfunctional. So once we become functioning out of our cultural paradigm, America is going to have to change. So we don't have to keep spending a whole lot of time really worrying about the Europeans all we, like Terrence was saying, we need to focus on ourselves, and we need to create the spaces to develop ourselves out of the Pan-African, African-centered, African personality. So I'm going to just give Derek whatever you, wherever you want to go with that. I'm going to give you a few minutes, and then let Terrence go for a few minutes, and then we open up the line. So wherever you want to go with that, Derek, go on, man.
All right. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Gala. You know, you had said earlier, because you know you're asking what from a cultural perspective, and that definition of culture, what do we need relative to this education? And you know, you had said earlier that you know, culture cultivates the spirit. It tells us who we are. It gives us a common theme, and it gives us our conceptual framework. And I think you even said that it's, how did you put it, that it's essential for any type of paradigm shift that we need to make, and clearly we need to make one. So, for the most part, our culture, operating out of our best culture, will define for us what our definition of success should be. We're operating out of faulty definition. We're operating out of Eurocentric, distorted understanding of what's best for our people. And I recognize that I'm preaching to the choir, but those are the things that we have to take into account in developing any type of educational system. We have to understand that we have to define what success is for our youth. And oftentimes, we have to begin to develop those things that get our young people to get those competencies and those skills and those metacognitive, and I think I'm using the right term, Gala, those metacognitive capabilities that help our young people to understand that their purpose is to solve, their ultimate purpose of their education is to solve the problems of their people. That is the final goal. We are being successful when you have reached a point where you are assisting in or part of moving in the direction of solving the problems of our people, of advancing the collective interests of our people, and securing, as Dr. Amos Wilson would say, securing the survival and empowerment of our people. So that definition of what successful education is the first thing we got to deal with, because getting a 4.0, getting straight A's, receiving certain degrees, if those things and the knowledge and competencies gained in attaining those things aren't moving in the direction of utilizing those skills to solve the problems of our people, then we are a failure, not a success.
Mm. I say, brother, I say. So that's a collective preservation you're talking about, brother, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Collective preservation. All right. Well, Terrence, which whatever way you want to go with it, brother, you got it. Don't take a few minutes to drop some more science, man.
Man, I'm just going to pick up that baton right there and keep going. It sounds like Bobby was about to quote Dead Friends Day School, because that's what's playing in my mind with this latest topic right here. You know, just the chorus, Day School ain't teaching us. My people need freedom. We're trying to get all we can get, you know. And his last point, if that education ain't teach you how to get a livable wage job, it ain't teach you how to take care of yourself, make you interact better with your community, your people, I mean, what is that education for? And, you know, it is to continue to keep those in charge. You become an exploitative tool out there if that education is not being used to free your people. You talk quickly about culture, you know, again, and Bob again touched on, you know, just that definition. And you know, culture is that you know, that multifaceted expression for people to adapt, you know, or people's struggle to adapt. And to give them that direction to be free from all exploitative and degraded you know, ways, and just to be a better, you know, provide for a better way in life. And just quickly, we talked about the Pan-African link, and I know Dr. Rogers was talking about people in Ghana and Africa. He was talking to One of the things that we've been doing this year with our podcast, Africa Must Unite, is we've been reaching out with other Pan-African revolutionary organizations around the world. And we done had the opportunity to speak to the All-African People's Revolutionary Party out of Ghana. We talked to Anjef, which is out of Senegal. We talked to the Emile Cabral School. We're going to be speaking to people in Congo and in Zimbabwe. So once again, creating that link, and we know our brothers and sisters in Ghana and the government has opened their doors, basically, saying, come on back. So, you know, we do have to make that connection and see where it takes.
All right. I say, fam. Y'all say, fam. Well, Baba, we can, Baba Rogers, we can open up for some questions and have some conversation with the family.
Fantastic. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Let me go over here to Brother Lush, Montgomery, Alabama. Good afternoon, Brother Lush. Again, thank you so much for your comments earlier on the first show. So I know I will give you a chance to open up for this program.
Thank you so very much, Brother Rogers, and thank you, Brother Watkins, for an enlightening conversation. The question that I have is, let me preface it. I admit I have gone through this European education system and have worked more towards having more red check marks than red X marks. In other words, striving to this to say that I've passed this particular course. Does it make sense within an Afrocentric or African-centered educational system to talk about tests and measures? Are there objectives that students underneath that kind and type of dynamic have to be able to display to determine mastery of a certain area or topic for that matter?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just, again, with our school, our Watoto, and appreciate it, brother, for the question. Through Watoto Yoruba Shule, we have learning objectives. So, you know, our goal is to help foster within students a level of awareness and commitment to the struggle for their people. Within that, we have learning objectives, such as, you know, attitudes, appreciation, value, emotions. Again, we teach that through the principles. We have cognitive objectives, knowledge, thinking, naming, recognizing, predicting. So, again, that is taught through identity. Having our scholars, our students understand that, you know, identity is connected to land base. So, you know, people say Black Lives Matter. You know, we say black is a color. We say African lives matter. Because Africa is, you know, it connects you identity speaking. So you're right. You're definitely going to need objectives, learning objectives, just like you would have in a Eurocentric education, but they're just geared to developing African people.
Okay. And one other quick and small question, because of the fact that in this day and age where statues are being pulled down, where I am here in Alabama, there's the small changing names of schools. We'd be at a disadvantage in the process of, saying, renaming a school from Robert E. Lee High School to another name to try to infuse an African-centered kind and type of curricula or process within that already public school / charter school system? Would that be at a disadvantage for us?
Are you asking whether that name change would be a positive thing or not?
Well, I'm asking if in fact there is a name change, say, from B. Lee to a another individual like Rosa Parks, in that process of changing, would it be at a disadvantage of trying to infuse a tidbit of an African-centered ideology in that school?
Well, no, I would say that would be critical, because while I definitely recognize the power and the in terms of developmental considerations of naming and language, that definitely has power at both a surface and a spiritual level. It would just, the most critical thing would be that, again, that the content, the framework, the conceptual framework, the essence of whatever that school is should embody that name, should embody the essence of that name. Because we've had that a lot here in Milwaukee. It's been so unfortunate to have some schools with some name changes. And, I mean, they in some of those settings ended up being the most, either the most Eurocentric or the most anti-African settings we would ever want for our children. And so, I just think just putting the work in to make sure that what's offered there lines up with the name, I think that's what's most critical.
Thank you all.
I just want to add, I know that, you know, they're tearing down Confederate statues, but they better keep going. We've got to tear down Jefferson, Lincoln, Columbus, and et cetera, and stop focusing on the Confederacy and focus on the birth of the Confederacy, which is this, you know, this United Snake flag. The whole thing. I mean, I don't get caught up in just that Confederate flag. Cut it out, people. Slavery didn't start with the Confederacy. It was under that flag that Jesse Walsh didn't even sew herself. We sewed the flag, so... So let's destroy all of those statues and images. But yeah, you definitely have to put it in. I definitely would suggest putting in some type of curriculum in those schools, or they will be backwards and capitalist, like Bob and Rogers just mentioned. So it takes more than just a name change. You got to institute the education in those systems too.
Thank you.
All right, yep. Brother Lush, thank you so much for your thank you so much for your call. Let's go to one of the very strong feminine voices in our movement, real good sister. She is a consultant to the Black Reality Think Tank. We really appreciate her, Sister Benicia, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes,
Habadi
Ghani. And Asante Sana. Greetings, Dr. Rogers. How you doing, my brother?
Wonderful, my sister. Wonderful.
Okay. And I have to say, Asante Sana, again, this is, this is medicine for my soul. This program is very powerful. Thank you, brothers, for what you're sharing. So I am a product of a person who went to, who was a part of African-Centered Educational and Cultural Center in Brooklyn. And that's where I learned to speak some Swahili and to say Asante and, you know, call my brothers and Ndugus and my sisters Dada. And what that did for me was to give me a sense of self and self-esteem that I was not getting from any place else. Being told that I was African and being shown what African culture is and practicing that, it shaped me into a person that I didn't realize that I was being shaped into until I grew up. There, I was thinking about a writing in the Bible, and I'm not a Christian, but there are just some universal spiritual principles that are in many of, you know, religious writings. And one of them is, if I'm paraphrasing, if you raise up the child, you know, with the correct information, I'll say that, with proper education, proper training, that when they grow up, they'll return from it. So even if they depart from it, they'll return from it because it's right and it's proper. Mm-hmm. And it's spiritually based. And we are spiritual people. And so, you know, my education in terms of an African-centered education occurred when I was much younger. I was in my teens. And I went through all kinds of stuff in my lifetime. You know, I'm now way in my, you know, 60s. Not way in my 60s, early in my 60s. But I went through all kinds of phases in my life, as many of us do. You know, a lot of them were negative. But because I had a proper education, I was taught who I was. I was taught the value of who I was, the value of being African. I returned to that. I returned to that some years ago. Even being in interracial, you know, communities and doing that type of work, I returned back to African because that's what's being African, because that's what's real. And again, that's what gives me my sense of value. And so this is the answer. In my experience, this is our only answer. And I think it's so, I truly believe it's so critical that we teach our young people this, because I see our young people being pulled by so many forces and in so many directions, you know, that there's a level of confusion out there, especially believing in any way that this system is going to do the right thing by black folk. Because like Malcolm said, we're not wanted here. And psychologically, it's very difficult for so many of us to accept that. We want that validation from the Caucasian that we're just not going to get. You will get elimination, and that's pretty much what we're getting. So I just want to, again, say thank you, because this is very powerful. I'm going to share this with everybody that I know, because this is the, when people say, what's the solution? What's the solution? This is it. And we did it in the 60s. Last thing, we did this in the 60s. I went through my African centered experience in the 60s. And one thing we do have to do as a people is to take a serious look at the internalized oppression that we carry into wherever we go. Yeah. You know, Pan-Africanist movement, African-centered movement, the brother that created the Ngozi Saba, that was a huge part of what we were doing, we were practicing, but, you know, internalized oppression was coming with us wherever we were going, and oftentimes it would cause us to sabotage the power that we were, that we have and that we were practicing. So we've got to include that in this process, healing from internalized oppression. So, Asante, my brothers and sisters.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bob, I would just like to add to the piece that she said is critical, is personality disorders that we have to address as it relates to internalized racism. So that's a major component of this conversation as we talk about repairing and healing ourselves. There's an exorcist that we have to go through to get to the place of identifying and living and practicing this African personality. So there's a process that we're going to have to create, and that's where the black developmental or black African developmental psychology and theoretical modalities come into play as it relates to being part of this curriculum. So as we have this conversation about Pan-Africanism and African-centered education, there are some tenets that come with this to, once again, to repair those of us who are damaged, but then also create a space and a buffer to protect our babies as they enter into this. We got to create a buffer to protect their personality development, their personality configuration as they move through these critical stages of development. So I just wanted to reiterate what the Queen was saying. That's a critical component.
Okay. Let's go over to Palm Springs, California, 760-534. Are you listening, caller, or you just like to say something? 760-534. Would you like to say something, or are you just listening? All right. It's just listening. All right. Let's go to 414-736. Are you listening? Like to say something. 414-736. Okay, listen. We have a brother here, Brother Maynard Sr., Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Are you listening? Would you like to say something? Maynard Sr., Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. All right. 414-429. Milwaukee, would you like to say something? You're just listening. 414-429. All right. But
Alfonso. Oh, yes, one other. 414-507. Would you like to say something, or you're just listening, Carl? 414-507. Okay. All right, Brother Alfonso.
We'll keep it moving.
Yeah.
I would just like to give Derek and Terrence a little more, ask another question. As we have this conversation and all of the valuable information that you two have shared, as we think about the vehicles that the intellectual, psychological, and warfare that we're dealing with as it relates to the vehicles that are being used to cultivate this dysfunctional finality through this European social construct. There, could you go a little bit more into when you start to articulate the type of approaches that are going to be needed to get our children attention, to get them interested in the African culture, and moving into the 21st century? Could you go a little bit more into that, brother?
Absolutely. I think the first thing, and where it all started, because one thing that I didn't say earlier, 22 years ago, Terrence Tyler and his good friend Melvin Biko Johnson, they actually were the first to introduce me to the value and the necessity of incorporating notions of hip-hop culture into my educational work. I was a funk, and I've told you that before, Gil. I was a funk man for so long that even when hip-hop hit the scene, yeah, I would hear it. It didn't go with me like that. But it wasn't until a little bit later, and I had already begun working with African youth, that I recognized that was the center of the place from which they were exporting their values. It was no longer, as we began to enter into the postmodern world, home was no longer the number one value. Parents was no longer the number one place they were receiving their information. Television was no longer the number one place. And religious institutions were no longer the number one place where they were having their values cultivated. It was popular culture and mainly hip-hop. So here we are even 22 years beyond that. Hip-hop is still extremely central. It will need to be one of the gateways into finding ways to utilize that as a pedagogical instrument. In educational settings, not just in schools, but any and every place where we encounter young people. And that's the other thing we have to understand as well, that we encounter our young people in a number of spaces. We have to transform those spaces into educational spaces on the move and on the run, because we cannot expect them to show up at certain places when they don't even go outside half the time. Much of what they're doing is right there in front of them, 12 inches from their face, and it's in their hand. So trying to find ways to reach them in digital spaces, operating within social media. One of the beautiful things about this quarantine and the pandemic thing is it's been an incubator for us having to engage other types of technologies where, no, they are not as human and to the heart, and that genuine stuff that comes out of many of our soul era. We need to touch people. We need to see their eyes in a genuine fashion. But these Zoom conferences and different things, whatever we have to do to get young people in spaces utilizing the stuff that they normally use, we have to use those things. And also getting to those young people, and then I'll stop, getting to those young people who already seem to have, and maybe it comes through the ancestral spirit that's rising up in them, that those young people who are able to move the crowd, spending more time with them and allowing them to be the voice that moves the crowd. It may not come from us. It may not come from me or Dr. Rogers or Alfonso, and Terrence is even younger than us, But we gotta find those ones that have that ability and have them utilize their competencies to move the information that needs to be moved.
I say, this is Dr. Rogers, you know, this is the wheelhouse. I'm still waiting for this hip-hop conversation.
That's right.
Bob Rogers nailed it with
yeah, hip-hop. He sure did. So he nailed that one. Bam.
it's a shame that, you know, I talked about my upbringing earlier in the groups that I listened to that helped gear me towards consciousness. And, you know, and people say, well, what's out now? And if you are immersed in this culture we call hip-hop, you know that people are still out. So when I name drop Dead Prez, Sick'em M1, Immortal Technique, K-Reno, D1, Rebel Diaz, Add 2, Kariga Bailey, Akala, Blitz the Ambassador, you can't forget the sisters, Psy-Rock, Ill Camille, Nairobi, Selah. So there are artists who continue to push the envelope with consciousness in today's climate. Unfortunately, hip-hop, like all African culture, has been co-opted and repackaged by the system. So these, you know, artists or people who are out and hot, quote-unquote hot, are manufactured in the studio. They're manufactured in the boardroom. You know, they'll tell you, this is what's selling, so in order to sell, you got to sound like such and such. And that's why a Nicki Minaj sounds like a Cardi B, who sounds like a Megan Thee Stallion, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and that's where we at with that. But, you know, the essence of hip-hop, the fifth element, the knowledge, will always be there. As long as, you know, most of them said, as long as there's struggle, people are going to write about it and talk about it. So, we have to educate ourselves on this medium, this culture, to begin to reach. Because I can't introduce Dead Prez to a sixth grader if I don't know about DaBaby and Lil Baby and whoever else they listen to. So I may have to subject myself to some of those ignorant lyrics to show them, hey, you could go this way, or how about listening to this? And, you know, we play with and go back and forth. You know, I don't want to be that old head that hates what's being, you know, propagated now. But more so, you know, kids are looking for the direction. If they tell you what's hot and you can juxtapose that with somebody out now who's saying something else, they're willing to receive that message. They just don't want it hammered on their head, or they don't want you shutting down what they're listening to and things of that nature. And my other point I just want to say is the one thing about the social media has been so positive. I'm getting so many of my former students who are probably 17, 18, 19 now, are hitting me back with, like, what books should I be into? What websites can I find? You know, this whole the police terrorism and the people mobilizing under this has galvanized the youth, and they're seeking that direction, and it's been beautiful in doing that. So, again, we have to understand hip-hop. Definitely, where I'm weak at is just social media, because I'm not on any of the social media platforms. So I try my best to listen and learn through the use through that avenue.
That was you. Can I add to that real quick, Gala?
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, no, and that was powerful, Terrence. That's it. And you know, popular culture in general. That's the place where we're going to have to go. You know, they're engaging so much more. Our young people, youth and young adults, are engaging so much more information. They have access to so much more information. So then we also have to find ways to help them to be able to filter what they're coming across. There's so many opinions, so many paradigms, so many ideologies, which in one sense is good because they have the access, but it's also creating it's creating a smorgasbord of thought that can be a bit confusing and keep our kids in a place where they cannot focus and narrow back in on what's essential. So whatever we can do in those mediums, social media, popular culture, hip-hop, that allows our young people to be able to name, deconstruct, and act upon the conditions that are oppressing them, that's the stuff we got to get in front of them.
Real talk.
And just to add to what y'all were just talking about, I think it's critical as we move forward with this conversation is understanding how Dr. Lumbin and Jeffries talk about your values, your interests, and your principles. And so in the context of what they're being exposed to and the behaviors that are being manufactured through the information that they're being portrayed to them, is where, once again, we have to create these rites of passage and manhood and womanhood training so that these, at these critical stages of their development, we are laying the foundation for their values, their interests, and their principles. And when in the thing was talking about, once we lay that foundation, regardless of what happens outside of that, the African center, that African personality, it's the foundation. And so that's part of, once again, so we're not just talking about educating youth. We're talking about re-educating the adults. Yeah. We're talking about re-educating some of the elders. So this is not just when we talk about an African-centered curriculum, we're not just talking about youth. We're talking about a curriculum that goes from the womb to the grave. Mm-hmm. So we have to start, once again, we have to start thinking outside of the European social construct and really start looking at how we are evolving from conception to death, to transition into the ancestors. So once again, I just wanted to add that into the conversation. Baba, is there any more people that may have questions out there?
No, so far you're good. Yeah, no, nobody else.
Doc Rogers.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Hello.
I was muted. No, there's nobody else, my brother.
Okay, so we just keep building on that. So Doc, Terrence and Derek, y'all wanted to, wherever you want to go, man, because I think the conversation with the it's going back into the pedagogy of what type of approaches that we're going to have to implement to get young people's attention. But the piece I think we need to once again harness in on is at when we look at from Head Start going into elementary, looking at, you know, from fifth grade to seventh grade or eighth grade to 12th grade, there are some things I think we got to really start focusing on to help our young brothers and sisters acquire a certain level of critical analysis of information, but then also helping the parents understand where their children are at during these critical stages of development.
Oh, absolutely.
So either one of y'all can jump on that, man, and move that, what direction I want to move it in, man.
Yeah, I think that deconstruction piece, that deprogramming piece of adults, that's an extremely powerful and interesting concept, and I don't think it's an impossible thing, because when you first hear that, you know, we go back to our old school and think, you know, they grown and they gonna be that is what it is. But I think we're finding right now the evidence in light of 2020 COVID, you know, upheaval, revolt, we are witnessing, you know, thousands and millions of people reassessing their values and their decision making. We're witnessing millions of African people who are beginning to question and interrogate things based on circumstances that have occurred. Yes, things had to hit them right in the face. A knee had to go right to the neck for people to really, really understand it. But however it had to happen, you know, for many people it's happened. So you can see the shift in consciousness in a lot of people. I you know, and I'll just say this real quickly. I saw one brother who I respect a lot. He kind of spoke. He said, well, you know, you got people wanting to throw on a T-shirt now and pick up a book and do all this. You know, that ain't where the revolution, you know, is, and that ain't where it's going to be. And I thought about that. I said, well, you know, there's levels to this. There's levels. And everybody ain't jumping right to developing some program that's going to be the answer to moving all of our people forward. Ain't nobody did that yet. So to say that someone who has awakened in terms of their consciousness, you know, to kind of put that down, I think that's a mistake. So I do think that people can still, their behaviors can be modified. People can awaken to other levels of consciousness if given the right opportunity.
You're absolutely on point with that. I mean, just take Malcolm X, for instance. I mean, he is a prime example of how he continues, his consciousness continues to raise, you know, through his levels of education and organization, you know, from, you know, his white man is the devil in his early stages of the Nation of Islam to the forming the organization of African Afro-American unity, where he saw, you know, capitalism as it. So, we definitely can't, you know, stick a person in a box with this shirt. If that shirt is their first awakening, let's take it from there. And what we need to take it to is political education first. So not only do kids, and that's one of the necessities of organization. That's why when you see people marching and protesting, that's a mobilization. So now that we've become mobilized, we have to take that to the next level so it doesn't fizzle out, and that becomes organization. And in doing that, when you become organized and you be involved in organization, you have to have study circles. You have to have those educated, because you got to continue to sharpen people. And in doing that, you need to study philosophy, ideology, Africa and history, the enemy, capitalism. You need to know these socialism, communism, these systems. You need to know objectives, revolutionary movements. You need to understand that what's happening with Black Lives Matter is an extension of the civil rights movement and the Black Power movement and other movements before. People have to study to know that, you know, to understand history to stand cold. You know, you got to look back into the past and the present to move to them forward, you know, forward.
Brother Watkins?
Yes, sir.
I have a real quick question for Brother Terrence, before you get off. How has African drumming or African art played a part in your program in Milwaukee with the African education? Again, how has African drumming and African art played a part in your education as Afrocentric education?
For our school, Batoko Yehuru Sule, we got one of the greatest artists in the world, in my humble opinion, and Ross Amar in Sarama. He has paintings and murals across the nation, for that matter, but just having that talent as a teacher in our weekend schools helps greatly, because I'm like, you know, the opposite of that when it comes to just art, period. So he's able to draw any and everything, and kids can get into it. So having that creative element, and, you know, in every school, people need whatever that creative avenue is. Like, my strength may be just understanding hip-hop culture. If somebody else can draw or somebody else can drum, you know, we bring that in. And I can't drum neither. So, but we got others who can drum as well. So, yes, when we talk about one of the subjects, identity and Ancestors Day in traditional Africa, we incorporate African books of artwork so they get a chance to draw masks and sculptures. We'll show some hieroglyphics and so they can get a chance to see that type of artwork. And we talk about the importance of the drum.
Thank you.
Yep.
Derek, did you want to add something to that?
You know, I personally, I think, you know, Terrence nailed it. Art and music, symbolic representation in general, is just very essential, and that's something that we're going to have to pay a lot of attention to moving forward as we create educational opportunities for everyone. How do we draw deeper upon symbolic representation to draw out those deeper meanings and awaken consciousness? I think that's something we don't talk directly a lot about, but I think, you know, as you know, Gala, from a psycho developmental standpoint, that's something that we're going to have to pay a lot of more attention to.
Yeah, and I think that's a critical component. And I'm going to go back to the Queen when she was talking about the, I'm going to use the term internalized racism. I can't remember exactly the term she was using, but we both on the same page with the concept of understanding how racism has impacted our personality configuration, and then how do we repair that? How do we, from a developmental psychology perspective, Naeem Akbar always speaks about how the social construction of reality under the European social construct, and then how do we deconstruct the European social construct, and then what do we reconstruct it with the African center, the Pan-Africanism personality or worldview. But first, once again, we have to help our people understand and recognize how internalized racism is impacting them from reaching their divine human potential. How that's hindering or limiting or not giving them access to that ancestral consciousness based on their perceptive and their how they internalize in racism. So once again, as we talk about the Pan-Africanism and African-centered education and personality and curriculum, we have to recognize that there is an African-centered theoretical modality that we're going to have to come up with to implement as it relates to the treatment of the personality disorders that we are dealing with within the context of our people. So this has been, y'all brothers coming back, right?
Absolutely.
Brother Alfonso, I just want to say real quick, I mean, you're taking me back to those early years with the name drops, the Naeem Akbar, Dr. Leonard Jeffries. I mean, I just remember those books and learning those about those people. I get fired up too. I'm fired up now just hearing that. It takes me back. And you know, we just got to continue to study, man. You got to sharpen that too.
Yeah.
And Gullah, let me say to you that, you know, much respect to you and what you've done in our community relative to African psychology. Yes. And just know that your field is central to everything that I've done relative to trying to build up African-centered education, because without that understanding of the mind, the Saku, it's impossible. So the Wade Nobles, the Marimba Adi, the Bobby Wright, the Kobe Kamban, all of these have been a part of actually me building up what I do in education. So I appreciate you. You are in a direct lineage to all of that. So I just want to say respect.
Oh, man, much love, Baba. Much love. Appreciate that, man. So we're going to let Doc Rogers close it out, man. What you got to say, Baba?
Oh, this has been awesome. I really appreciate the having the three of you in space together and being able to generate this conversation in the way that you have done so. It has been truly, truly empowering. Thank you, Baba Rogers. Thank you, Brother Terrence. Thank you, Alfonso, for your vision and for your work. Brother Alfonso, did you want to tell them about your program next week?
Next week, we are attempting to bring back Dr. Janine James. And there is another physician, MD physician, I call her Dr. T. Martin. She is, I think you had reached out to her in Palm Springs, California, but she is a cardiologist specialist. So next week we're going to have a more in-depth conversation about we have to start focusing more on our children's physical health.
Okay.
Our children are on some very unhealthy diets. They are eating the foods that they've been, a lot of the poisons and toxins that they are being exposed to are going to have an impact on their physical health. So we got to start having some more in-depth conversations about helping them be healthy. But then the other conversation, part of the conversation, is how do we begin to get more MDs and, physicians. We need our own hospitals. We need our own people taking care of us. We can't continue to go to these Europeans and they make the best interest for our physical health.
It seems as though we've been convinced that 26%
and if you know any doctors, please have them listen in next week. We have to come up with some approaches to come up with our own hospitals so that we can take care of ourselves, moving ourselves into the 21st century. This pandemic has exposed the reality that these Europeans do not have our best interest at heart.
Okay, so have a good weekend, everybody. Have a good weekend, everybody. Take care. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, people.
Hollywood.
Okay, take care.
On the move. Like a liberal. Acted like General Franco when he acted like governor of California. Then he acted like a Republican. Then he acted like somebody was going to vote for him for president. And now we act like 26% of the registered voters is actually a mandate. All actors in this, I suppose. What has happened is that in the last 20 years, America has changed from a producer to a consumer. And all consumers know that when the producer names the tune, the consumer has got to dance. That's the way it is. We used to be a producer, very inflexible at that, and now we are consumers and finding it difficult to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Natural resources and minerals will change your world. The Arabs used to be in the third world. They have bought the second world and put a firm down payment on the first one. Controlling your resources will control your world. This country has been surprised by the way the world looks now. They don't know if they want to be Matt Dillon or Bob Dylan. They don't know if they want to be diplomats or continue the same policy of nuclear nightmare diplomacy. John Foster Dulles ain't nothing but the name of an airport now. The idea concerns the fact that this country wants nostalgia. They want to go back as far as they can, even if it's only as far as last week. Not to face now or tomorrow, but to face backwards. And yesterday was the day of our cinema heroes riding to the rescue at the last possible moment. The day of the man in the white hat or the man on the white horse. Or the man who always came to save America at the last moment. Someone always came to save America at the last moment, especially in B-movies. And when America found itself having a hard time facing the future, they looked for people like John Wayne. But since John Wayne was no longer available, they settled for Ronald Reagan. And it has placed us in a situation that we can only look at like a B-movie. Come with us back to those inglorious days when heroes weren't zeros. Before fair or square, when the cavalry came straight away and all American men were like Hemingway, to the days of the wondrous B-movie. The producer, underwritten by all the millionaires necessary, will be Casper the Defensive Weinberger. No more animated shorts is available. The director will be Attila the Hague.